Good morning, and welcome to the Clene Incorporated presentation of CNM-Au8 top-line data from the HEALEY-ALS Platform Trial conference call. Please note today's conference is being recorded. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question-and-answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press star followed by the number one again. Thank you. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Rob Etherington, CEO of Clene. Mr. Etherington, you may begin your conference.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Welcome, everybody, to the HEALEY-ALS Platform Trial results this morning. We are very grateful to have Dr. Merit Cudkowicz with us from the HEALEY-ALS Platform Trial. Dr. Merit Cudkowicz is the Chief of Neurology at Massachusetts General Hospital, the Director of the Sean M. Healey & AMG Center for ALS, and she joins our Chief Medical Officer, Robert Glanzman, and our Chief Development Officer, Michael Hodgkin, and myself to discuss these results. I will remind everybody of the forward-looking statement that is covered under the Safe Harbor provisions of the Private Securities Litigation Reform Act. I caution listeners that management will be making forward-looking statements today, and actual results that could differ materially from those stated or implied by our forward-looking statements due to risks and uncertainties associated with the business. These cautionary statements are contained in today's press release and our SEC filings. The contents of this broadcast contain time-sensitive information that is accurate today, and we undertake no obligation to revise or update any forward-looking statements. As a reminder, this conference call and webcast will be recorded and archived. We issued a press release this morning detailing the contents of this call, a copy of which can be found at www.clene.com within the Investors section. Let us jump straight into our presentation. I'll just have a few introductory slides, and we'll go straight to Dr. Merit. Clene has growing clinical evidence across ALS and MS that supports CNM-Au8 therapeutic potential. For those that are not familiar, Au8 is a gold nanocrystal suspension in development as the first cellular energetic catalyst. We released data last month from our RESCUE trial that suggests the 70% decreased risk of death in ALS. Also last month, we released the data from VISIONARY-MS, which demonstrated a global neurological improvement in MS. We now have collectively 400 patient years of clinical experience across our programs. Target engagement we established last year with the REPAIR studies. RESCUE, I've just noted, with a p-value of 0.0115, suggesting this statistically significant improvement of decreased risk of death. As I just noted, VISIONARY is the first therapy to demonstrate global neurological improvement in MS patients on top of background disease-modifying therapy standard of care. Now, my final slide. We've been pioneering now for a number of years this new drug class of nanotherapeutics to improve cellular energy production, the way that we use energy within the central nervous system, its efficiency, and even the capacity of the central nervous system to use it effectively is rather driven by mechanistic effects that increase NAD, increase ATP, decrease reactive oxygen species. Taken together, this improvement of energy production and utilization seems to be increasingly protecting neuronal health. As I've noted a minute ago, 400 years of subject experience collectively shows that we've not identified safety signals, and today's data is consistent. Let me turn now for the main event, Dr. Merit Cudkowicz, to review the results for CNM-Au8 regimen. Merit, we turn the time to you, please.
Thank you very much. I want to just briefly recap the design of what was the first ALS platform trial. This was designed to test multiple regimens and to have the efficiency of a platform trial, including the time to start new regimens as well as the sharing of placebos across regimens. We started with three regimens, regimen A, B, and C, and C is CNM-Au8, and then shortly afterwards, we added D. Participants are randomized to one of the open regimens and then followed for 24 weeks in a double-blind period. During that double-blind period, there's a 3-to-1 randomization to active to placebo. After 24 weeks, participants have the option to go into an open-label extension, and the majority of our participants did elect to do that. The primary outcome measure is a change in the slope of functional rating scale called the ALSFRS. It's adjusted by mortality. And then our secondary outcomes includes a joint rank for function and survival, slow vital capacity, as well as survival, which is measured as mortality, as well as permanent assisted ventilation, which is 22 hours a day on non-invasive ventilation, such as BiPAP. So in regimen C, or the clean arm, we tested two doses, so 30 milligrams and 60 milligrams, and 120 people on active and 40 on placebo. And then in the analysis, we used the placebo data from regimens A, B, C, and D. Next slide, please. So just to go through the participant disposition, 686 participants were assigned to regimen A, B, C, or D. Of these, 163 were assessed for eligibility for regimen C on the right side of the screen. Two were excluded, one unfortunately passed away during the screening period, and one timed out of the screening window, but the majority went on to be randomized, 161 to regimen C. Of those, 59 were randomized to CNN-AU8 30 milligrams, and 61 randomized to CNN-AU8 60 milligrams, and 41 randomized to placebo. And if you look on the left side, the remaining participants were assessed for eligibility to A, B, or D, of which 400 went into the active arms of those regimens, and that left 123 that were randomized to placebo across regimens A, B, or D. And in the analysis, those are combined with the 41 from clean for a total of 164 shared placebos for the comparison. So the primary analyses are using combined dose versus that shared placebo group. Next slide, please. So this is the primary analysis, which, as I mentioned, is ALSFRS with mortality figured into that. And we did not see statistical significance at the 24 weeks for the combined dose. And again, just to repeat, we did use all shared controls. This graph in particular just shows the data on ALSFRS for the survivals. We account for mortalities and a common treatment effect, and we have important pre-specified adjustments for covariates, which is time and symptom onset, the pre-baseline change in the ALSFRS slope, use of edaravone, and use of riluzole, which are two marketed drugs for people with ALS. Next slide. We looked also at the key secondary endpoints, again, for the combined dose, 30 and 60 together, and we did not see a significant change in the combined assessment of function or survival, also known as CAFS, at the 24 weeks, and no effect at slow vital capacity at the 24 weeks. Next slide, please. We did see a survival signal, however, at the 30 milligram dose, and these are two graphs. On the left, on your left, shows the comparison of survival using all the shared placebos for the 30 milligram dose. And then on the right, you see that same comparison, but just using the placebos from the regimen, so the 41 placebos only. And you see a consistent finding, whether you're looking at mortality, the first time to mortality or permanent assistant ventilation, or just mortality alone, with really over 90% risk reduction at this dose. And again, this is consistent with what Clean had found in their rescue study done in Australia. These were pre-specified, but these p-values are not adjusted for multiple comparisons. Next slide, please. Safety was quite good. The occurrence of treatment emergent adverse events were balanced between the CNN-AU8 and placebo groups. No SAEs were assessed or related to CNN-AU8. There was a small increased incidence of SAEs at the 60 milligram dose. Next slide, please. So in summary, we did not see evidence for treatment effect at the 24 weeks for either the adjusted ALSFRS revised primary, the CAFS or SVZ, using the combined doses compared to the shared placebo. However, we did see a potential survival signal with over 90% decreased risk at the 30 milligram dose. And this was present whether we looked at mortality or PAV or just mortality. We did not see any new safety signals. It was very well tolerated. Next slide, please. And I'll turn to Dr. Glassman.
Thanks, Dr. Sudovich. I'm Robert Glassman, Chief Medical Officer of Clean Data Medicine. Next slide, please. So here we see the mortality data that Dr. Sudovich referred to. On the left is the data from our Rescue ALS trial, which was performed in two centers in Sydney, Australia. And here you can see a significant approximate 90% risk reduction in risk and mortality with a hazard ratio of 0.0291. Sorry, it's approximately 79% risk, or 81% risk in reduction in mortality. And on the right, we see the data that Dr. Sudovich just referred to from the Healy ALS platform trial. So what we're showing here is two independent phase two, you could argue one is a phase two, phase three study in the case of Healy, showing reduction in significant reduction in risk of mortality with CNM-Au8. Next slide, please. And that just adds to the growing body of evidence that we are showing, that this concept of providing energetic support to cells that require it, especially neurons and oligodendrocytes, appears to have beneficial clinical effects in people with neurodegenerative disease. And we've shown that now with our phase two study, Visionary MS and multiple sclerosis, and now with two studies, independent studies, in ALS. And of course, we have also shown target engagement in Parkinson's disease with our repair program. I would also add that our COVID program with the zinc silver asset will be reading out in this quarter as well. Q4. We'll be reading out in Q4 this year. Next slide, please. And with that, turn to questions and answers. Sorry, Rob, go ahead.
No, thank you, Robert. We should also note from the previous slide that Clene made a very categorical statement in our press release of this morning that we're continuing the open label extension of CNM-Au8 in our rescue study, as well, importantly, in the Healy study, and are working with the Healy AMG ALS Center at Harvard to offer additional expanded access protocol of CNM-Au8 to patients as the need presents. Let us turn now to questions and answers. We are very, again, excited to have Dr. Merit Sudovich with us. Presume many of the questions might actually come to her. And Robert, Michael, and I can also fill. Operator, please open the question line.
At this time, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. Again, that's star, then the number one to ask a question. Your first question comes from the line of Charles Duncan with Cantor Fitzgerald.
Good morning, Charles.
Taking this call, and thank you, Dr. Sudovich, for sharing your perspectives and conducting this important study in ALS. I had a quick question for you, if you could provide, you know, your perspective with regard to the mortality benefit. I guess I'm wondering if you could put this into context for patients and whether or not you believe the observation is an artifact of a small sample, or do you think that it's an interesting observation that should be explored further?
Thank you for that question. I think it's an interesting observation that needs to be explored further. ALS remains a fatal disease with a huge unmet need, even with the recent, FDA approval of the Amylyx drug. And I think now we have two studies that are consistent at the 30 milligram dose of a potential survival benefit. So it really begs the need to do a, I would think, is a phase three mortality study to confirm these findings.
Very good. And I know you've done a ton of work in this field for many years on how to measure efficacy and what matters to patients. And I guess I'm kind of wondering if you could reconcile the observations, call it functional chains versus mortality. Do you think that at least from a mechanistic perspective, thinking about what CNM AUH should do, if that makes sense to see this kind of divergence in terms of efficacy?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I might defer also to Clean on the mechanism part as well. But I do think that we designed these phase two studies to be 6 months so that we can get some proof of concept to go further. But there may be some drugs that's okay for 6 months to see an effect on maybe function and breathing, but other drugs that need more time. So it's not surprising to me that we might see a difference in mortality and function for certain drugs, and we might need longer time. And we're starting to see that in other drugs in ALS.
Okay, one last question for you. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Robert, do you want to follow up?
Oh, certainly. And thanks, Dr. Sidovich. Certainly this has been suggested by even what we saw in rescue. Now, of course, we did not have the rescue data when we entered into Healy. But what we saw in rescue is that it probably takes about 3 months or longer for CNM-Au8 to, reach tissue equilibrium. We know that from our preclinical toxicology work. And in rescue, we really don't begin to see a benefit until about 3 months. So having a six-month study, as Dr. Sidovich has already said, is really quite efficient for testing drugs to look for proof of concept. But in the case of CNM-Au8, it's probably not optimally long enough in order to see an effect on function. And that's what we saw in rescue. We really didn't see, even though we saw an effect on survival as early as 6 months, we didn't see an effect on function until 9 months. So it's really quite consistent.
Okay, one last question for Dr. Sudovich. With regard to the expanded access program that Rob just alluded to, I guess I'm kind of wondering why this decision was made. Has it been made for any of the other cohorts? And is it really a call out for this? Is this a unique observation that you've made with regard to this particular cohort in terms of having some benefit for patients?
Yeah, good question. So I'd say at the beginning, we asked all our partners to provide expanded access to people who are not eligible for the trial. And every regimen except for regimen A did that, and in small numbers. But now this is different. Now that we have some results, what do we want to do? And I think number one is we absolutely want to continue the open label extension and finish the analysis of the data we have, because that would give a longer term follow-up data on safety as well as survival. And I'm a big proponent of, expanded access programs for people not eligible for trials. And I do think you can design them in a way that can inform, particularly around biomarkers and safety, while you're also, obviously planning the phase three. That's going to be critical.
Okay, very good. Thank you for sharing your perspectives this morning.
Your next question comes from Sumant Kulkarni with Canaccord Genuity.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my questions. First few for Dr. Sidovich. Thanks for all the work that you and the Healy Center do. What do you think needs to be seen further in terms of maybe biomarkers from the open label extension to strengthen this hypothesis around survival here?
That does give me an opportunity to remind that we actually haven't finished all the analysis. We've done the top line results, but we have additional biomarker data to analyze, including fluid biomarkers as well as digital biomarkers on the randomized part of the trial as well as an open label. We designed the platform trial to inform about the drugs, but also to develop new tools to measure the illness. So I think what we want to do in the open label, obviously, is additional survival and look at this additional function, and we have a whole statistical plan for that, but also look at genomics on everybody, neurofilament, markers of inflammation, markers related to the drug, and that's all in the planning.
Mm-hmm. And you alluded to this a little bit in your previous answer, or one of them. In your experience with the ALS trials, given that this 6 month primary and secondary were not hit, what do you think Clean might need to do to show benefit for CNM-Au8 in terms of future trial design and duration to tease out the survival benefit in a way that a regulator might be on board?
Yeah, I think we did learn about dose in this study too, and that's really important that Clean did test two doses here, and I think we have now identified 30 as a really good dose to go forward with. And I think anytime we look at survival as a an outcome measure, we need longer time. And whether that's it would be a 12-month study or an 18-month study, that would have to be in discussion with the FDA and the biostatisticians. But I think that would be important for the phase 3 part of the study.
Got it. And this is for both you and the company. In your experience with products that constitute either treatment or in the pipeline, could you place the survival benefit into context, especially relative to Amylyx's recent Centaur data?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, we did not see a survival benefit 24 weeks in the Amylyx study, so that is a difference here. And it's just too early to compare the open label extension yet from Centaur to the Clean, because we haven't done those analyses yet for the open label. But I think at this point, if you just compare the 24 weeks, there's a signal in that 30 milligrams here, and there wasn't in that Amylyx.
Got it. And my last one for the company, what do you think your path forward is here is going to be, given this data set that you have? When's the earliest you could go potentially to the FDA to check what the next steps might be?
Thanks, Sumant. What we're going to do is continue to wait for all this data that Mara just talked to arriving by the end of this year, including the open label extension as well as the last patient last visit, which will also inform through next year. Take that data, which is concordant with RESCUE, as RESCUE itself continues to grow, and then have end of phase 2 meetings with the agency and ask exactly this question. We expect that will be at top of next year sometime.
All right, thanks. I'll hop back in the queue.
Your next question comes from Elmer Piros with Roth Capital Partners.
Yes, good morning. Dr. Sukovic, have you observed any baseline imbalances between the CNM AU8 arm and the respective placebo arm, and or any other placebo groups in the other cohorts, please?
Yes, and thank you for that question. In big picture, the groups were similar, but there were some important differences. In the particular, weight and body mass index was less in the active group versus placebo, and we know that's an important marker of disease severity, with people who weigh less having more rapid course. And also the distribution of whether people had widespread illness called definite ALS or a more limited distribution, what we call possible. And that was also skewed for more widespread disease in the active treatment group. Now, those particular variables were not pre-specified as covariates, but other ones that are kind of similar were, such as the pre-slope change of ALS-FRS, time from symptom onset to diagnosis. So all the analyses you saw were using the pre-specified covariates, but we have not gone back to do exploratory analyses using those BMI and the distribution of the disease.
And do you think that the imbalances could explain the perceived signal here or treatment effect when there is one mortality event in the CNM AU8 treated group and what you characterized as less than 10 in the placebo group or groups?
Oh, no, I don't think. I think it goes the other way. Those two differences are actually weighted against more severe illness in the clean group, not less.
Okay.
So again, we did other covariates that I think handled this imbalance.
Yes. And how many patients have you, has decided to join the open label extension at this point?
Oh, the majority. The majority of people in the clean, I don't have the numbers exactly, but more than 90% elected initially to go into the open label.
And how about the other two cohorts which didn't come up with a positive signal, cohort A and B?
Yeah, initially, I think in all the regimens, there was a 80 to 80 plus percent of people went into the open label.
Okay, so they are A and B treated patients, or cohort patients are still treated with those drugs that previously didn't succeed?
Well, we've now stopped. So A was stopped early for futility in last February. So those people all stopped the open label, and B, we just stopped. We just announced last week that the results were negative, so we are stopping that open label.
And do you think, and this is my last question, and thank you, do you think that there would be a group of patients who continue on placebo treatment that would be useful as a comparison to longer-term observation of survival benefit, potentially due to CNM-Au8?
Well, because of the design of the trial, really, we don't have a group of people after 24 weeks on placebo, because everyone was given the option to go on to the open-label drug of their regimen. Mm-hmm. Now, we do obviously have people who went on to an open-label of a drug that was not effective, you know, A and B, but I don't know. I think those type of comparisons are very exploratory and have their own biases, so I'm not sure how useful they would be.
Yes. Thank you so much, Dr. Sukovich.
Your next question comes from the line of Joe Pantginis with H.C. Wainwright.
Hey, everybody. Good morning. Thanks for taking the question and all the details so far. So, Dr. Sudovich, I'm just curious to tease out a little more of the earlier discussion about the survival signal here, which is intriguing. Are there any particular components that you can point to that you feel, you know, even functional, that are contributing to the survival signal?
I think it's a good question. I think it's too early. As I mentioned, we haven't completed. We've just done the top line results, and because regimen C is sharing the placebo from regimen D, which is not database locked yet or completed, you know, we won't be able to do all those table listing figures with subgroups and really tease it out until that arm is completed.
Got it. And I really appreciate the details you've given about this study. So I guess I want to ask you a little bit more of a macro question. So obviously, you know, Healy started in 2020, you know, around those time frames and earlier, you know, the main focus has been on ALS-FRS-R as the primary endpoint for ALS development. So obviously, the field has been evolving greatly. So just wanted to get your views on, you know, obviously the regulatory environment has seen a lot of important, you know, with the Amylyx approval and what have you, and, you know, is ALS-FRS relevant anymore? I'll sort of start with that and get your some of your macro views.
Yeah, I think it's still very relevant. I mean, we have now two drugs that have been approved based on changing that slope in 6 months. So it's actually pretty good. Would we like to do better? Absolutely. It does miss some important changes in patients. And so we'd like to get more granular outcomes. And that is part of the platform trial, to keep building in other approaches that maybe one day can replace it. But right now, it's still pretty good. The reason we liked 6 months is a couple of reasons. One is that for patients with a fatal disease, it's hard to ask them to be in a placebo-controlled trial for longer. They'll do it if there's a good reason, but if we can get an answer in 6 months, it's much better. And the other is that the scale is actually very linear at certain parts of the illness, but the longer you go, it suffers a little bit from lack of linearity, as well as obviously people drop out. So for the right drug, 6 months is a good time, but some drugs might need longer.
Got it. No, that's helpful. And I guess my last question, you know, maybe for Robert, anything mechanistically that you can sort of touch on why maybe 60 mg wasn't as effective or effective from a mechanistic standpoint?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Not that we can think of right now. There were, I'll say this, there were baseline imbalances, and the 60 milligram arm seemed to suffer from those even more than the 30 milligram arm, and that could explain why we did not appear to see a benefit of 60 milligrams. That being said, I think we can conclude that 60 milligrams is not going to add any additional benefit. And given the fact that, so there's no need to take the 60 milligram dose forward. So at that point, I think it almost becomes a moot question, because we're simply going to move forward with 30 milligrams.
Okay. Thanks, everyone.
Your next question comes from the line of Naz Rahman with Maxim Group.
Hi, Dr. Sudovich. Thanks for all your work in ALS. I just have a couple of questions. To the extent that you can you comment on potentially what the average or median baseline ALS-FRS score was for, let's say, the entire Healy study, and maybe provide some commentary on regimen C Queen's arm?
Yeah, I don't have those numbers in front of me right now, but and maybe Robert will know for his for this regimen, but I think it was in the high 30s.
For the Healy study as a whole?
Yeah, yes.
Okay, my next question is sort of like a high-level question. So obviously, Queen still has some work to do on a regulatory front, but now that there's essentially three different compounds approved for ALS, and there might be more approvals in the future, what are your thoughts on potential combination therapies, especially in regards to CNM-AU8?
I think
Go ahead.
Oh no, I was just gonna say I think that's really important for the field to move towards combination treatments. And in a way we are, because in these trials we allow a standard of care. So people were allowed to be on the midazolam and riluzole, and obviously we added the new active drug to that. But I think it would be really important to keep thinking about which drugs are synergistic to put together.
And my final question is just on the open label extension. Are you also measuring ALS-FRS and CAFS and SVC during the open label extension, or are you just measuring survival?
A good question. Thank you. We are measuring ALS-FRS and breathing during the open label extension, as well as survival, and collecting fluids for biomarkers.
Got it. Does Queen have any additional comments on those questions?
No, just to say that, you know, we're excited about the potential for, especially the biomarker data, both, you know, and we have the potential only to be able to compare early versus delayed treatment, because everyone will be on therapy after 6 months. And with regard to the, you know, the 6 month length of the trial, we completely agree with Dr. Sudovich. 6 months is, for most drugs, is certainly a suitable time frame. That's for CNM-AUA, it's just a bit of a different beast. And we didn't really understand that when we first started the study. In fact, if we go back and look at rescue, we didn't really see an effect on the slope of change of the ALS-FRS, certainly over 6 months. What we did see is a difference in the proportion of people with a 6 point or greater decline in ALS-FRS over 9 months. That was significant, although not adjusted for multiple comparisons. And these are the kinds of data that we'll be able to kind of do post hoc data mining in this study to look and see if we can see these kinds of effects that might explain the survival data that we're seeing.
Got it. Thank you for taking my questions.
We have a follow-up question from Sumant Kulkarni with Canaccord Genuity.
Thanks for the follow-up. So based on these top-line data, we're seeing some survival benefit, but could you talk about real-world quality of life of the surviving patients relative to typical ALS progression, or any qualitative data you could share relative to other arms that have results already?
Two comments on that. One is we don't have a quality of life scale in the platform trial. Again, we didn't put that in the phase two part of the study. Because you know, really just a priority of what outcome measures we can do and how much we can ask from the participants. But we would obviously be able to look at things around different parts of the ALS-FRS that can give us some guidance on that, as well as we have some digital outcome measures, including voice and home breathing, and all that will come out in the next set of analyses.
Got it. And last one is a financial one for Rob and team. How are you thinking about cash runways and other things that you could do to take this product and other parts of your pipeline forward?
As we noted in the press release, we're looking at a number of options, actually, including the possibility of strategic partnerships, some of which are ongoing now and deep dive discussions. And we will also use opportunistic moments in the market to decide how to best manage that. But we are committed, including very categorically our board, to making sure that the patients who have been on our asset are able to continue.
Thank you.
And there are no further questions at this time. I'll turn the call over to Rob Etherington for any closing remarks.
We are grateful for everybody who joined us. We especially want to close thanking the many patients who participated in the Healy AMG ALS platform trial and Dr. Merit Sudovich and more than 50 other clinics around the country who enrolled these patients and have been working tirelessly on behalf of ALS patients. Thank you for your time and attention today. We look forward to talking to you at future such conferences.
Thank you for participating. You may disconnect at this time.